Chapter 17, in which the sons of Durin are cowards. It is the most frightening task they have faced in over a decade. They have seen violence and pain and loss and death. They are the terrors of Scotland, the nightmares that mothers whisper about and hope their children will not hear. They are the sons of Durin. And they are all bloody cowards. It's Glowin who brought it to their attention, of course. He was a father, and he often brought these sort of things to them. He told them in a hushed voice one night, while visiting most of the family in a crowded, smoky Edinburgh pub, that it must be done.
"Gimli's just been learning about it in school," he told them, face drawn and solemn. "Feely and Keely won't learn it there, of course. If you don't explain it to them, they'll have to find out on their own."
They all shuddered at that, and someone murmured a little prayer. "But surely they know," Ori said, blushing beet red and fumbling with his oversized mittens. "I mean, they must, mustn't they?"
"And if they don't?"
Dwalin growled, hands tightening around his glass.
"Would you have them learn elsewhere?"
"Keely runs with street urchins,"
Beaufort said, caught in the grip of despair.
"Who knows what they might have taught him? And Feely, if he hasn't learned more online than any of us have ever known, I'll eat my hat."
Thorin thumped his empty glass down on the table loudly, gathering their attention. His back was straight and his shoulders strong, and there could be no questioning the serious look in his eyes. This was Thorin Oakenshield, speaking as their leader.
"It is our duty to see that they know all they must,"
he said soberly. Heads nodded around the table, and a wave of relief passed through the men. Thorin was a good uncle, and would see to matters. He stood, leaning both hands on the table to gaze down at them all.
"You have been the bravest and most loyal hearts I have known, and it is my honor to leave this duty in your capable hands."
They gaped at him, and Thorin straightened quickly, grabbing his coat and speaking rapidly.
"I'm leaving for Orkney. I'll be back in a fortnight. See to it that the job is done."
And in the swirl of a black leather coat, Thorin Oakenshield had fled the pub, but with a certain majesty.
"More beer,"
Orin called glumly, and they stared into their glasses quietly. "Glowin, you should do it," Dori said after a while. "You've got a lot of your own. You'll know how to talk to them."
"No."
The answer was flat, and came fast.
"I've done my duty by my own lad, and someone else must handle those two."
"You were a married man, Dori. I'll bet you could tell the lads a thing or two," Nori said, nudging his brother with a meaningful wink. Dori shook his head sadly, and his eyes went blank and empty. Three others kicked Nori under the table. They considered asking Beaufort to do the job, but quickly agreed that they didn't have enough signs in their language to allow him to communicate effectively. Bomber said that, as an MP, he had to make enough distasteful explanations on a daily basis to excuse him this duty, and they couldn't argue that one. Owen pretended to be too deaf to hear the question when it was put to him. Nori sighed in exasperation and slapped the table. "Well, hell, I'll tell them myself, and there'll be no need for all this beard-pulling and chin-wagging."
"No!"
they shouted, a universal disagreement that had him blinking in shock, and Dori patted his shoulder consolingly. "Nori, my lad, you're an excellent fellow with many decent qualities, so please believe me when I say I will be very sorry if we're forced to turn you over to the police for corruption of minors." Nori shrugged, unperturbed. "It was a one-time thing. You needn't act like I'm a complete scoundrel." "But you are," Ori said, wrapping his arms around himself protectively. "Remember, you tried to give me the talk when I was 16, and Dori stopped you halfway through, and I still have nightmares." He cringed at the thought.
"You can do it, then,"
Glowin said, clapping Ori on the shoulder cheerfully.
"You're closer to their age than any of us. Just talk to them like one of the lads."
Ori stuttered uselessly, and wound up sliding bonelessly under the table, where no further word of sense could be wrung from him for the next half hour. So that just left Beaufort, Balin, and Dwalin, and they all felt it would be rather unfair to nominate Balin to the job in his absence, since he was at home with the lads that evening. Finally, Dwalin downed his beer in one last gulp, and stood up, stalking out of the bar without a word.
A braver man than I, Beaufort said, with the tip of his fur hat. And that was that. Except that it wasn't. Dwalin found most of them the next day, looking stressed. He shook his head, his mighty arms folded across his chest.
You didn't tell them?
Nori hissed, eyeing the house behind Dwalin with trepidation.
They were babes in my arms once.
Dwalin growled, looking half mad, eyes wide.
I cannot.
Fila's gonna be 16, Beaufort said desperately. We've got to. Beaufort sighed furiously. Dwalin was a coward, and the rest of them fools. Beaufort nodded his head despondently, then took his hat off with great ceremony, marching into the house like a man going to meet his doom. The rest of them hung around awkwardly, trying to look like they were innocent urban bird spotters. It was half an hour before Beaufort came back, looking rather shell-shocked. They swarmed him as soon as he came out.
"Did you do it?"
Ori asked. Nearly begged, really. And Beaufort gave a weary shrug. "I did my best," he protested, snatching his hat back from his cousin and tugging it onto his head. "They just misunderstood everything." He sank down to sit on the bonnet of the car, shaking his head.
"Oh, did you tell them it was about love? Or use a metaphor? They're not so good with metaphors,"
Ori said sadly. "Balin will have to talk with them," Dori declared, nodding his gray head. Dwalin sighed, and made his way silently into the house. It was an hour before he reemerged, looking even grimmer than before. They all shouted in disbelief, and he put up an angry hand.
"Balin has given his best effort,"
he shouted, quieting them in a moment.
"They are unteachable."
"That's what you said about addition and subtraction, too,"
Owen said, and then remembered he was supposed to be too deaf to take part in the conversation, and turned away to look innocently at a fallen leaf.
"Thorin will have to do it himself," Beaufort said sadly, "and we have let him down."
There was a snort of disgust, and Beaufort stalked toward the door. They all glanced around at one another anxiously, not sure whether they should stop him. He came back 10 minutes later, calm and composed, and nodded to all of them. A small smile played around the corners of his mouth, and they all stared at him.
"Did they?" Beaufort asked. "I mean, are you sure?"
Beaufort signed easily, "The job is done, and you are all cowards." He put his hands in his pockets and walked away, whistling an ancient tune.
Upon the hearth the fire is red, beneath the roof there is a bed.
But not yet weary are our feet, still round the corner we may meet.
A sodden tree, or standing stone,
that none has seen but we alone.
Tree and flower and leaf and grass,
let them pass,
hill and water under sky,
pass them by, pass them by.